Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Are America's universities educating students or indoctrinating them? We're in the midst of a cultural revolution, and many believe the epicenter of this revolution is on the college campus. In today's broadcast, our host, Pat Zukeran, interviews Dr. Corey Miller, president of Ratio Christi, and the author of The Progressive Miseducation of America. Let's hear how postmodernism, Marxism, and woke ideology came to dominate higher education, and how Christians can respond with truth and hope. Now on to part one of this two-part interview entitled The Progressive Miseducation of America.
You're listening to Evidence and Answers, where we provide compelling evidence for faith and hope in Christ and biblical answers to the issues of today. Well, we're in the midst of a cultural revolution in America. And at the epicenter of this revolution is the university campus. Well, what is this cultural revolution all about? What are the main ideas behind this revolution? What are the effects that this revolution is having on the culture and the church? Well, to help us address this issue is Dr. Corey Miller. Corey Miller is president of a great campus ministry, Ratio Christi, a campus apologetics evangelism ministry on 150 campuses throughout the world. He has 4 graduate degrees and has taught nearly 100 courses in philosophy and religion, including Indiana and Purdue universities. So today we're discussing his recent book, The Progressive Miseducation of America. So Corey, welcome back to Evidence and Answers.
Dr. Zukeran, good to be back here with you again. So fun to see you in person a couple of times, visiting you there and being on your program. I love it.
Well, Corey, what motivated you to write the book, The Progressive Miseducation of America, and what are the cultural trends that concern you the most?
Right. Well, initially, I wanted to create a platform for speaking to give more visibility to our ministry, Ratio Christi. I needed something that would be able to open that door up. And once I started into the research and realized, okay, this needs to be industry-wide, and in fact, it needs to be country-wide. I need people who are wondering, what in the world just happened to my country? This is no longer Grandma's America. And it's not just America, it's a revolution that is happening in the West. And so I wanted to dive into something that helps people to be able to see what happened, how it happened, and what we can do about it going forward. Because it is, in fact, a revolution. It's not a hard revolution. It's what I would call a soft revolution. I studied all the major literature in revolutionary theory and so forth as I was preparing for this, and wondering what kind of revolution this was. And, you know, they don't always come along with tanks and guns, not initially anyway, but this definitely is a revolution. It's a cultural revolution and we're living in it right now.
Yes. And for those of our listeners in Asia, you ought to be really concerned because what happens in the West comes to Asia more quickly now, as many of the professors at the universities there are educated in the United States and Europe and bring back those ideas to Asia. So as I'm speaking throughout Asia, I can see Asia changing as well. So Corey, that's a big word, revolution. I mean, that means something significant is happening here. And you state America and the West is going through a cultural revolution. So tell us about this revolution. I mean, what's happening here?
Well, I think living in America, you've got your eyes on politics, and I think the rest of the world does too. What they see Trump doing or American politicians doing, it has reverberations throughout the world. What people need to recognize, however, is that politics is downstream from culture. Culture is downstream from education, and at the apex of education is the university. So I like to say that as goes the university, so goes the culture. And right now, anyway, as goes the U.S. university, so goes the world. You pinpointed it there around the world. 1 out of 3 world leaders, 1 out of 3, earned an academic degree from a United States university. So it really is the case of, you know, people wanting to come to the United States to study at the universities here and then to go back leading in their culture, in businesses, in politics, in their you know, K through 12 or whatever the grade levels are for education. And what we're seeing just in the political upheaval in this country, conservatives and liberals alike, Republicans and Democrats alike, they're all feeling the ground moving underneath them. Let me give you some examples. Right now, serving on the Republican cabinet are two recent Democratic presidential candidates, RFK, a Kennedy, and Tulsi Gabbard. You also have people like Elon Musk, who played no small measure in helping, you know, Trump's reelection campaign and the Republicans. He was a lifelong Democrat. He's a transhumanist who has 13 children, you know, most of them illegitimately born, helping to repopulate the West because the West is going through population problems. It's not just the West. You're seeing it in Korea, in Japan, and so forth. But you see things like that. You see Bruce Jenner, who was on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine as one of the first celebrity sort of transgenders. Well, he ran for governor of California as a Republican backed by the Republican National Convention. This is just craziness. What is going on here? And you get people like Joe Rogan, one of the most famous podcasts in the world, Jordan Peterson, both calling themselves cultural or existential Christians. And so everyone can feel, even hearing people like Richard Dawkins, the avant terrible of atheism over the last, you know, two decades, he is feeling accosted right now because he has had the throne room taken from out from underneath him. You know, he had the American Humanist Association strip him from a title or a medal that they'd given him 25 years ago for the Humanist of the Year Award because of some things that he said. And now he wants to call himself a cultural Christian. So something is going on. You have, you know, on Twitter or now X, hashtag LGB drop the T. LGB drop the T. In other words, there's a split between the gay homosexual part of leftist social causes and the trans part of this. So there's a sort of a dismantling, an internal disruption happening there as well, because it's getting so radical in the politics that, you know, some people are asking politically, are there any Democrats left anymore? Are there any true liberals, or are they mostly illiberal and Marxist in the Democratic Party? So there's a lot of changes happening right now in America, and politics is just downstream, but it's really coming from upstream at the universities.
Right. And, you know, in your book, you argue that education is never neutral, although it's presented to us that way. We give you the options and you're going to choose, you know, but there's an ideology and some worldview assumptions behind a modern education today in the public schools and at the university. So what are some of those worldview assumptions that are shaping Western or American education?
Right. I mean, a lot of that was formed by the Jesus movement. You have, you know, a Judeo Greco-Roman background shaping Western civilization, but for the most part, from early education to the universities as we know it. And I'm not just talking about European, I'm talking about American, as well as Indian and South Korean. All of these were impacted by Christ and the Christian medieval and late modern notions of university. And so you had this groundwork there of theism. There is a God and he's separate from his creation. So creator, creation distinction. And when the American universities began almost 400 years ago, the Puritans came over from England and other parts of Europe. People were migrating over to America. And within a decade or two, they started Harvard. Everyone knows of the University of Harvard. Harvard's motto by the Puritans was truth, or veritas in Latin. And it was capital T truth, not just your truth and my truth and 8 billion other truths. All truth is God's truth. They quickly changed that name to Truth for Christ in the Church, which lasted nearly 300 years from 1636 until 1936, which was the tail end of an ideological revolution that took place, and ideas were now changing. So now, if you can consider, well, what the medievals used to say, that they would say that theology, the study of God or the thinking about God, is the queen of the sciences, and philosophy is its handmaiden. In other words, if you can think of theology as like the hub of a wheel, and the various disciplines are the spokes, so biology and mathematics and engineering and language, they're all held together in the hub by a certain glue, which is the pH behind every D. So the doctorate of philosophy in education, doctor of philosophy in engineering, doctor of philosophy in history, doctor of philosophy in physics, or whatever. That is a worldview way of looking at things, that everybody's got a philosophy, a view of reality, how we know about reality, and how we should then live based on what we know about reality. Those are the three branches of philosophy. What is real? How do I know what is real? How should I then live based on what I know about reality? Well, the first revolution began, and that hub was no longer theology, it was atheology. It was scientific naturalism, and you started to see all the departments changing their names. It was no longer politics, which was a form of ethics for the public good. It was now political science. And it was no longer the department of psychology, the psychology, or the study of the soul, because now there no longer is such a thing as a soul. So it's the Department of Psychological Sciences. Everything now is getting reduced down to chemistry and physics at the end of the day, because the worldview, the hub, has changed at bottom. It is no longer God, but it is non-God. And so everything else is going to be affected by that God factor. And so that's what starts to launch us into what I am calling the first ideological revolution.
Yeah. Now, you called your book The Progressive Miseducation of America. That's significant. How's that different from, let's say, education reform?
Right. And interestingly, I didn't call the book that. The publisher did, and I agreed with it. It started out as The Third Revolution, From the Campus to the Culture and a Vision Forward. The publisher said, we want to title it something a little bit different, and we're going to call it The Miseducation of America. And quickly, it was realized that Pete Hegseth, Department of War in America, has a video documentary series called that. So they added the word The Progressive Miseducation of America. And we talked about that. We agreed on that. And the difference there, Patrick, is that when Harvard began, the purpose of the universities was veritas, the pursuit of truth, the free exchange of ideas like modern capitalism or the free market enterprise. Out of competition, good things can arise. And out of the free exchange of ideas, may the truth prevail. Debate is not hate. Debate is a good thing if we're pursuing truth. But under the progressive miseducation, it's no longer educere, the Latin term to impart knowledge and skills like critical thinking. Instead, we're indoctrinating. And that's especially true in what I'm referring to as the second ideological revolution, which we're currently living in right now. And there's a story I tell how that one developed and what it is as well. But it's different. It's not teaching, it's not imparting knowledge. It's not imparting skills, critical thinking skills. It's telling people what to believe, and it's manipulating them through the sentiments, the emotions, guilt manipulation through a certain methodology. And I get into that in the book.
Yeah. You know, you see on the university campuses, you know, at our top universities where the Ivy League schools, people protesting against Israel after the, you know, what happened there in Gaza, or protesting Black Lives Matter against, you know, white racism. And when they actually get interviewed and say, why are you protesting? What are you protesting about? They really don't know. And so what you're saying is correct. It's no longer teaching truth, but really persuading people to think a certain way.
Yeah. And in fact, the people that are some of the leaders of the current revolution, that's been around for quite some time now, but it's become more explicit in their books and in the literature, and their videos, their speaking and so forth. They refer to themselves as scholar activists. They don't even believe that the concept of truth is what it has been since, for 2,500 years, right? Aristotle used to say, to say of what is that it is true, and to say of what is that it is not is false. And this hinges on what is called the correspondence theory of truth. A statement is true if and only if it maps onto reality, if it squares with the way things are. So you might think about this in terms of, I've heard it described in terms of baseball. An umpire calls balls and strikes. In the early years, for centuries, millennia, you could see a pre-modernist understanding of this correspondence as, I call them what they are, the umpire says, balls and strikes. The modernist comes along and says, I call them as I see them, right? You have to see it to believe it. You have to taste it to believe it. You have to smell it to believe it. Science and scientism. The postmodernist comes along and says, it ain't anything or it ain't nothing until I call it. And so it's all about the wordsmithing shaping reality for us now. Our minds corresponding to concepts which don't necessarily even map onto the world. These are two very different ways of approaching reality. But, you know, when the first revolution happened, at least in the United States, it's because we did not have in our universities, not Princeton, Harvard, Yale, Columbia, none of them. I've been to all of the colonial schools that were prior to 1776, when the United States became a nation. I've been on all of their campuses. I spoke at Princeton just 3 months ago. And, you know, these universities were all part of the pre-modernist package that had been thinking this way for not just hundreds, but thousands of years. They didn't have any graduate schools. And so we sent our best and brightest over to Europe, which had the big universities, the ones that had been around for hundreds of years before that, and especially to Germany, the most formally educated people in the history of the world at the time. And that's where they had PhD programs. And that's where you get people like Immanuel Kant. We remember him because you Kant no ultimate reality, right? Mm-hmm. So he was the father of modern agnosticism or I don't know-ism. And you get people like Freud, the sexual revolution. You get people like Nietzsche, God is dead, life is meaningless, nihilism. You get Marx and Engels and other people like that. And all of our people would graduate now with PhDs and come back to the US and they would start to take over Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Columbia, and force all of those more traditional thinkers into brand new upstart universities, far behind in their bank accounts and their technology and things like that, while they took over the universities. And that scientific naturalist revolution lasted about 100 years, culminating in the last 20 years of the new atheist movement led by people like Richard Dawkins. That you have to see it to believe it, right? Science, because nature is all that is, was, or ever will be. Well, right at the tail end of that revolution in the 1930s, it lasted about 50 years, another nefarious ideology was taking place in Europe, in Germany again, and this was at a little place called Frankfurt, the Frankfurt School of Critical Theory. Today we hear about critical race theory, critical gender theory, critical queer theory, critical pedagogy, critical iceberg theory, for heaven's sakes. It's not critical thinking, it's part of the new views of Marxism. It's a wedding of Freud and Marx coming together. And this Frankfurt School did not win in Germany. A little mustache guy named Adolf Hitler came to power instead. They were the globalist socialists against the nationalist socialists, and no one knew who would win. The national socialists, the Nazis won. If you're a globalist socialist, you had to get out of town. And where did they go? Brandeis University, Columbia University, University of Los Angeles, and so forth. And right below them in Italy, you might look at this as like the Axis powers of socialism. You had the president of the Marxists there, Antonio Gramsci. He never even got out of prison. He died there, but his prison notes got mediated into the English-speaking world right here in my state of Indiana from a quasi-Christian school of all places, Notre Dame University, by a Marxist professor named Joseph Buttigieg, father of Mayor Pete, who was a presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. And so this was queer theory, critical queer theory. And within 15 years, you have the fountainheads of postmodern thought coming about in France. And that was like Derrida, deconstructionism, Foucault, Rorty, and Lyotard, and other thinkers who all happened to be members or sympathizers of the French Communist Party. So this is an amalgam now of postmodern cultural Marxism And it has come over into our universities. The first revolution gave us scientific naturalism, and it infiltrated the church and gave us liberal Protestant theology and the social gospel. The second revolution has infiltrated, and it has given us social justice. And now people even like Richard Dawkins have been knocked out by it and are trying to become friends, like we did with Stalin in World War II, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and some new revolutionary guard is in town and taking over the universities in the U.S.
Yeah, so you gave us a great walkthrough of how the progressive miseducation of America happened and how we ended up where we are today. Well, let's expound a little bit on it. I mean, you mentioned three dominant ideas here that dominate the university campus: postmodernism, Marxism, and critical theory, or some know it as wokeness. Tell us a little bit about the first two, postmodernism and Marxism. A lot of people are surprised. I remember growing up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and if you were a Marxist, I mean, you got beat up. I mean, it's like, you know, go back to Russia or something. But now it's like the accepted fad, you know, so tell us a little bit about postmodernism and how it really opened the door for Marxism and eventually where we are today with wokeness.
Well, so Marx was part of the modernist group in terms of the era when he lived. He and Lenin looked on at the French Revolution and salivated. In fact, that's where the term proletariat, the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, right? These are French terms. The working class and the elite class come along. And the guillotine, again, a French notion. Marx was a modernist. He thought that his dissertation was a scientific perspective about the world. And so he still believed to a certain extent in science. But it was when the neo-Marxists, the new Marxists came along, because they saw, okay, what happened here? The revolution was supposed to happen in Western Europe, but instead it happened in Russia. It was supposed to happen at this time and in this place and in this way, but instead it happened that way. And they realized, these new Marxists, these critical theorists, and the postmodernists, that it's not identical to Marxism, but they've come together in kind of an amalgamated package together, even though there's an uncomfortableness, just like transgender and LGB. The Marxists, the cultural Marxists, realized, you know, there is not just haves and have-nots, economic haves and have-nots, the rich and the poor, and workers of the world unite, you know, and throw off the shackles of the ruling class, the nobility, and guillotine them, cut off the heads in the French Revolution, so forth. No, it's now cultural, because these new Marxists realized that the reason why it was not successful in Europe and why it would never be successful in America is unless they diagnosed the problem more. And that is to realize that there is deep within the West this soft tissue of culture. Gramsci, the brilliant one who never got let out of prison, said there's political society and there's civil society. Political society is like military, law enforcement, government. But in the West, it's not ready for a frontal assault kind of revolution. It's got to be a soft revolution. Because anytime you are lobbing shells across the bow and shooting at this society, it's like a living cell. It just has something within it that self-regenerates. And it's this soft tissue of culture, ergo cultural Marxism, and it has to do with things like academia, media, and ecclesia, which is our word for church or gathering, right? And so the cultural Marxist realized, unless and until we ensconce ourselves deeply within the soft tissue of Western culture, it'll never be ready for a full-on frontal assault and revolution in political society. So we've got to go on for a long march through the soft tissue, through the institutions of the West. And it became known as the Long March Through the Institutions. Postmodernism was sort of like relativism. It was skepticism, a radical skepticism about meta-narratives and grand stories describing reality, because according to the postmodernists, unlike their modernist counterpart, there is no truth.
We once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586. Or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.